I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we're into extra time.
Kia ora and welcome to Extra Time. I'm Stephen Houston. The Silver Ferns are on the back foot after losing the opening Constellation Cup netball test to Australia in Auckland on Thursday night. After trouncing Australia by 10 goals to win the Quad Series last month, the Diamonds head back to win by 3 and go 1-0 up in the 4-test series with Game 2 in Christchurch on Sunday afternoon. We're joined now by our netball aficionado, Bridget Tunnicliffe. Well, Bridget, no surprise, I suppose the Diamonds were out for revenge and they got it. But did you expect a better effort from the Ferns?
I think I was disappointed with our attacking end last night. They tried, Janine Southby swapped Tutaia and Mez again. I think it was after the first quarter. Tutaia went back to goal shoot, and I think Tutaia looked a little bit uncomfortable there. I think she was getting frustrated. But I think that that had something to do with how she was being fed. I thought Gina Crampton had a pretty good game at wing attack, but Shannon Francois at centre, she just sort of wasn't an option enough. She wasn't driving onto that circle edge, and Tutai was looking out for someone to be there, and she just wasn't there. So, overall, I wasn't surprised with that performance by Australia. They were far more grittier last night. I think it goes to show that performance and that Quad Series game in Invercargill was poor from them. In the end, it was only 3 goals. So I do think the series is going to be tight.
You mentioned there that we maybe got a little carried away, perhaps, that we are on the performance of the Silver Ferns, when in fact it was such a bad one from the Diamonds last time around.
Yeah, I mean, I do think at the same time it was a really good performance by New Zealand. So it was, sort of a bit of both. But, it was just one game. But it wasn't as if I don't really think the Silver Ferns were getting carried away. I just think there were so many stories over and over again about, the Australian Diamonds are going to, there's going to be this backlash. And no one needed to tell the Silver Ferns that. They knew that. No one should be surprised by that performance. And the Silver Ferns, they weren't getting carried away, I don't think. They were diligent and they kept talking about it was just one game. But it's a shame that I cannot remember the last time when the Ferns have actually had back-to-back wins against Australia. That's a really big issue.
And maybe too much made of Kelly Jury, and maybe too much pressure on Kelly Jury, thinking that she'd had the better of Caitlin Bassett in that Quad Series game, and that was going to be the way it was this time around.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel a little bit sorry for her, because there is a lot of pressure on her and a lot of talk about her being the answer to Bassett. I do think she's a great player, and she had a fantastic first game. But it's not uncommon for someone to have the better of a player one game, and the next game, your opposition gets the wood over you. So I think it's just a matter of her not getting down about not having a great game. She just needs to, do the hard work. And I think Janine Southby's got a really good option with Temalisi Fakahakutau, because they're such different players. So they offer really different things.
I suppose to Kelly Jury, she's so inexperienced and such a young, developing player.
Yeah, this is really her first year in the Silver Ferns. She's only, 20, 21? This year was her second sort of full ANZ season. She's got a long way to go. She's not the finished article, and she'll be more savvy next time she comes up against Bassett.
Test number 2, that's in Christchurch Sunday afternoon. Thoughts on how that might unfold?
I think we might see Janine Southby revert to Mez back at goal shoot, Tutaia at goal attack. Tutoya just seems a bit happier there. I would like to see South B start with Sam Sinclair at centre. I do think that's a really big problem area for the Silver Ferns centre. It's kind of, it doesn't really make sense why Shannon Francois doesn't seem to be having a lot of drive and impact in that midcourt, considering how good she is for the steal. It's a little bit confusing, but Sam Sinclair came on for about the final quarter last night, and she did well. I just like the way she plays, and she's really good defensively. So I think if we need to get someone else up to speed in that centre position, and we can't wait any longer. We really need to give Sam Sinclair a go. Yeah, I think we'll see a better attacking end. They just looked out of sorts last night. Maybe a bit more hunger across the board. I think it'll go probably down to the wire, and I think the Silver Ferns really need to win this game, and they've got a really good chance of doing that.
I suppose the other problem they've got is, I mean, Janine Southby's made no bones about the fact that the Commonwealth Games are her target. Although they haven't won the Constellation Cup for 5 years, she's still fine-tuning. But at some point, she's got to stop that and maybe settle on her top lineup. I mean, given there's not really much more between now and the Comm Games.
In an ideal world, she would, but she's got about three or four players who have only entered the Silver Ferns environment just recently. I mean, you've got Whitney Sooner, Sam Sinclair's only had a handful of games, Jenna Crampton's only had a handful of games. I don't know if it's possible for Janine Southby to know right now who her top seven are. So I can see that she's got a difficult balancing act, and I wouldn't be surprised if there is a bit more experimenting, because, yeah, I mean, the Constellation Cup would be great to win it, but I think we would sacrifice. I think most fans would sacrifice that in the name of the Commonwealth Games.
Thanks, Bridget. That's our netball reporter, Bridget Tunnicliffe. The Kiwis Rugby League World Cup campaign's in disarray, with coach David Kidwell admitting he was blindsided by star forward Jason Tomalolo's defection to Tonga. Kidwell has named a squad which includes five debutants for the tournament, which will be jointly hosted by New Zealand, Australia and Papua New Guinea. But it's missing some big-name players who have deserted the Kiwis.
Hamhaya plays the last play. Now let the party begin. The black and white ball is underway.
When the Kiwis won the 2008 World Cup, it was described as a rugby league miracle. Kiwis, it seems, will need another one if they're to repeat the effort in 2017. David Fusitua, Sio Sioa Takiaho and Manu Ma'u were all in line to join Jason Tomalolo and the Kiwis, but have now pledged their World Cup allegiance to Tonga. Australian media reports have suggested the players made a pact to play for Tonga after Kiwis coach David Kidwell suspended teammates Jesse Bromwich and Kevin Proctor from the World Cup for breaching team protocol earlier this year. Bromwich and Proctor were banned over allegations of buying drugs at a Canberra nightclub following the Kiwis' test loss to Australia earlier this year. David Kidwell says he tried several times unsuccessfully to get hold of Tomalolo to discuss why he was turning his back on the Kiwis.
That's the most disappointing thing. You know, I respect his decision, but I think, you know, a conversation between myself and him would have been a good thing to do. You know, and as far as we were concerned, Jason was part of our World Cup team.
Kidwell's won just six of his tests as coach of the national side, and he accepts there was not universal acceptance of his decision to ban Bromwich and Proctor, although he won't resile from it.
Everyone's going to have their own opinion, you know, but at the end of the day, we've made that strong decision for the jersey, and we're trying to build a new Kiwi spirit here, and we're not going to condone that behaviour.
The Tonga coach is Christian Wolfe. He's unaware of Tomalolo's move to Tonga being a rebuke of Kidwell as Kiwi's coach.
It certainly hasn't been, you know, any real push from my end. You know, I think Jason's really sort of been the catalyst for it, and he's been the first to jump there, and everyone knew he was going to be picked for New Zealand, but he came out and said that he was going to play for Tonga and gave his reasons why, and I guess it just took one bloke to do that, and particularly a person of Jason's profile, and yeah, that certainly made other guys realise that was what they wanted to do as well.
While the defections to Tonga will take a toll on the Kiwis' World Cup title hopes, it certainly adds greater interest to the tournament and plenty of spice to the clash between the two sides in Hamilton early next month. The Kiwis' opening match of the World Cup is against Samoa in Auckland in just over 3 weeks' time. The Wellington Phoenix have a new coach and plenty of new players, but will anything change on the field when their A-League football season kicks off on Sunday? The Phoenix again failed to make the playoffs last season, finishing seventh in the 10-team competition, with coach Ernie Merrick departing partway through the season. Barry Guy looks at whether Phoenix fans can expect anything different this time around.
Shake to line up the shot, then pulled it back. Here's a chance for Colazzo! It just gets worse and worse for the Wellington Phoenix. Five in the back of their net now.
That result was the extreme for the Phoenix last season, but for almost all of their 10-year existence, the side has struggled in the competition. The best they've ever finished the regular season was fourth. They did that on three occasions, and they got within a game of the grand final once in 2010. In 2013, founding coach Ricky Herbert resigned and was replaced by Ernie Merrick, who in turn stood down in December last year with Des Buckingham and Chris Greenacre taking over. In June this year, the club signed up Dario Kalasic and Rado Vidicic as their new coaches. With a change of coach, there is normally a change in playing style. General Manager David Dome says while they're always looking to improve, he wouldn't say this is a watershed moment for the club.
We've got to 10 years and we've done, you know, well in those 10 years. We need to take it, really step it up now. And we feel that with the way we've brought the two coaches in and the different level that they're bringing, or intensity that they're bringing to the trainings and the off the field preparation work, that is really helping us drive a lot of that through the rest of the organisation as well.
That's backed up by Phoenix chairman Rob Morrison, who admits the team hadn't reached its potential in recent years and the club now wants more accountability from its players.
Last year we spent the most we've ever spent on the team. It was the most expensive squad the Phoenix has ever assembled, and we never realised its full potential. So one of the tasks for Dario and Rado is to realise the potential that we think is there.
The former Phoenix and all-white defender Ben Sigmund is optimistic once again. He believes the change of coaches will bring a fresh approach, and he's been impressed that the coaches have been working the players hard in the pre-season. He also likes the signing of Australian striker Dario Vidicic. However, Sigmund wants to see the young New Zealanders in the squad, like Alex Rufer, Matt Redenton and Tom Doyle, step up this season and through their performances demand a starting place. He feels that would also mean the team won't have to expect so much from their marquee players.
We sit there and rely on all the big signings and probably put a little bit too much pressure on them at times. And, you know, when you're actually performing right round the park and everyone's chipping in, then it takes a lot more pressure off your big signings and the playmakers to just do their thing and you know, hopefully bang some goals. And
one of the half a dozen new players in the side is the Australian defender Daniel Mullen. Mullen has played the last 3 years for Newcastle and admits they always found it tough getting a result in Wellington. However, he was at a loss to know why the Phoenix struggled away.
If you look at the squads over the last few years, there's always been really good squads. So it's always been one where, you know, people looking in sort of think, well, why aren't they getting the results all the time? Like I said, I haven't been here in the past, so I don't know why. But coming in here now and seeing training firsthand, seeing the coaches, what they've tried to implement, seeing the players, the experience, the young players, and everyone gelling together, I think that, you know, this season can be different.
A survey of A-League coaches has the gap closing between the competition's big clubs like Sydney and Melbourne Victory and the rest. However, most have the Phoenix still finishing in the bottom half of the table. The Phoenix are at home to Adelaide this Sunday.
The Breakers begin another ANBL basketball season this weekend when they play Cairns in Auckland on Sunday. Much will hinge on import guard Edgar Sosa's ability to distribute the ball for natural scorers Corey Webster, Tom Abercrombie and Kirk Penny. But there are questions over an ageing Breakers side that only narrowly missed the finals last season to end a run of successes that featured four titles and a Grand Slam final appearance, all since 2011. Matt Chatterton joins us now to discuss the season ahead. What are we expecting? I mean, there was no title for them last year. I suppose fans may have been left a little bit disappointed. So, but what do you think lies in store for this year?
Yeah, well, what happened last year was, I guess, you know, sort of had to be expected in a way, given that Paul Henare was in his first year as coach. And then they had a series of injuries which really sort of threw their whole season into, you know, disarray, I guess you could say, in a way. And they didn't make the top four. They were only one win outside the top four, which, given their circumstances, was quite impressive. They've retained somewhat most of their roster this season compared to last year. They've got two new imports, though, guards that should provide a bit of razzle-dazzle, shall we say. I was watching them today out of the Breakers training session, and they looked pretty handy with ball in hand, so that should be good. They've also picked up a few bigger guys. They've got James Hunter playing, Rob Lowe, Alex Pledger obviously has been there for a long time. So their team is looking relatively good. Their first game is against Cairns this year. They lost to Cairns last year, which effectively cost them a chance of making the top four last year, so they'll be hoping to get the season off to a good start with a victory over the Cairns Taipans.
Tom Abercrombie, I suppose he's someone that you'd be expecting a bigger season from. He was pretty quiet last year. A few injury problems.
Yeah, a few. He was one of those players, like everyone really, that just seemed to pick up a few niggles and was never really able to recover. I guess you can't always say it's down to one man. Everyone around them needs to pick up their game. You've got the experienced head of Kirk Penny. You've got Mika Vekona, the captain. All those guys will need to really call on their experience and help some of the younger fellas coming through. You've got the likes of Finn Delaney and Shea Illy, young boys that will be playing a lot more minutes this season, so everyone really needs to pick up their game. But you did right, Tom Abercrombie is another one who will need to get back to the form that he was in back when the Breakers were winning their championships, because he was instrumental when they were winning those titles.
And what do we know about their imports?
Well, they are both, well, one comes from America. Well, they actually both come from America, and one is a Dominican Republic representative in international circles. They've never really cracked, I guess, the big time of the NBA, but they've been playing in the smaller leagues around America and also overseas. DJ Newbill and Sosa are their names. They've come, I guess, it's a bit like every year with the Breakers, you know, they pick two imports and they normally pick two guards, so it's nothing out of the ordinary in that sense. But I guess they will bring a bit of experience, because they are lacking a bit of experience in the point guard position with only Shea Illy there now that there's no Corey Webster to sort of help out in the guard spot. So they should provide a bit of a level head, I guess, for Shea and help him sort of develop his game a bit more.
So where do you think the Breakers look strong, and where do they perhaps look weak?
Well, I guess they typically have always looked strong. They've got some big, strong forwards. They've got Alex Pledger, who's been around for a long time. Mika Vekona, names I mentioned earlier. I guess the one thing that they'll obviously, you know, be in the paint, and they'll be quite strong. They'll be very physical. They'll get a lot of baskets, and they'll probably win a lot of ball. The area where I see them probably struggling a little bit is in that guard position. They've got two new imports. They are starting to gel a little bit, but it still does take a long, you know, they've got 28 games this season. They've got a long road ahead of them, and they're going to need all that time to sort of really understand each other and get used to each other's moves and certain ways they play the game. So I think the guard position will be where they really need to knuckle down and put some hard work in. But talking to Coach Paul Henare today, he said that they are starting to see some good combinations working. So fingers crossed that I guess they can make that happen throughout the season.
Prediction? Got to get one from you.
I do think, well, the bookies over in Australia certainly don't give them much of a chance. In fact, they have them finishing dead last. I don't think it'll be quite that way. I think we'll see them probably somewhere in the top six. Whether they'll finish top four is, you know, yet to be determined. Obviously, the season's a long road ahead. If they can stay injury-free, unlike last year, they will have a good chance, because they have retained a large number of their squad. So if they can stay injury-free and get some cohesion going in that starting squad, they should be good for a top six finish, hopefully.
It's the holy grail of Australian motorsport, a Bathurst 1000 victory. And several New Zealand drivers are hoping to become the first Kiwi to win the famous race since Greg Murphy in 2004. Australians call it the Great Race, and for many New Zealanders, it's treated the same on this side of the Tasman. Barry Guy has more on the four New Zealand drivers who are real contenders to be crowned King of the Mountain.
The roar going up everywhere now. The lights are flashing for Murphy.
It's a great job, isn't it? He's just done a fantastic job here.
Well done, Greg Murphy. You can hear the cheers inside and outside the car as Murphy and Kelly make it two in a row.
Well, beauty, mate. Well done.
Greg Murphy did the double for Holden in 2003 and 4, the last New Zealander to win as lead driver at Mount Panorama. This year, the New Zealand dry spell is tipped to end. Scott McLaughlin arrived at Bathurst as the Supercars Championship leader, while Shane van Gisbergen is the defending championship title holder. Holden driver van Gisbergen has gone close a couple of times on the mountain. A few years ago, he was leading when the car let him down, while last year he finished second to Will Davidson.
Been close, got the 12-hour there, which was special, but never the big one. But for me, when I'm there, I always just treat it like every other weekend. You know, I love championship. I want to win that. So last year, it was just all about 300 points.
Van Gisbergen is currently fifth in the Supercars standings, well behind fellow New Zealander Scott McLaughlin, who has been the outstanding driver this season in the Dick Johnson Racing Penske Ford. McLaughlin drove for Volvo for the last 3 years with his best finish at Bathurst, a fifth in 2015. He was in contention last year until he was taken out by another car late in the race. The 24-year-old says it took a while to get over that disappointment.
Yeah, it was a tough gig to take, but at the end of the day, you know, if we can bounce back this year and win, it'll be fantastic. But yeah, we'll do our best. I'm so excited. I feel like, you know, like I said, it's my best opportunity yet. If I can get it done, oh man, it'll be a dream come true.
McLaughlin and co-driver Alex Premer finished second at the Sandown Enduro race last month. McLaughlin's teammate and the third New Zealander in the race, Fabian Coulthard, is also firmly in the championship mix and finished fifth in Sandown to show his Ford has plenty of endurance pace too.
You know, I'm just happy with the progress. You know, you come here each year, you can't wait to get here, and we're finally here, and turning laps around this joint's fantastic. You know, it's the best track that we go to, if not in the world. So, it's pretty special.
Richie Stanaway may be seen as the Kiwi young gun at Bathurst, but he's by no means short of racing experience, having competed around the world in Formula 3, GP3 and GP2, and he's also driven for Aston Martin in the World Endurance Championship. He finished 12th last year in his debut on the mountain, but this year he's in a very competitive car. Stanaway teamed up with Cam Waters in the Pro Drive Ford to win the last round and the opening endurance race in Sandown last month. And Stanaway knows another strong performance would go a long way to securing a lead driver's role in Australia next year.
Yeah, definitely. It's I haven't been too quiet about my ambitions for the future. So, but at the moment, my focus is on just getting through the next two races and doing the best possible job I can as a co-driver. And then, we'll just see what materialises after that.
So what does the legend himself think? Greg Murphy believes all four New Zealanders are in with a genuine shot.
Van Gisbergen and Campbell are right there as well. We've got Scott McLaughlin and Alexander Premer, who, again, they finished second at Sandown. And Richie Stanaway, who won Sandown, and only his second attempt at Sandown, he wins it with Cam Waters. They have become contenders. We've got Fabian Coulthard and Tony D'Alberto. They are genuine contenders.
And it would no doubt mean a lot to the driver and New Zealand fans if one of their own is crowned King of the Mountain.
Barry Geyer with that report. It's 6 months until the Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast, with New Zealand expected to take a team of more than 250 athletes to compete at the event. That would make it the largest Games team New Zealand's fielded, surpassing the 249 athletes who competed at the 2006 Commonwealth Games in Melbourne. Among them is likely to be diver Shay Boddington. She was just 17 when she competed for New Zealand at the Athens Olympics in 2004, but she gave up diving because she couldn't stand the way she looked in her togs, battling bulimia. She's now back competing, and her ultimate goal was to compete at the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo in synchronised diving. Earlier this year, she competed at the World Champs in Budapest in hopes the Gold Coast Games will be another stepping stone on her journey. She spoke to Sally Murphy about the problems she's had to overcome and what got her back into the sport.
So I stopped at 17 for about 13 years and had a little girl in that time who's now 3, and I didn't have any videos of me diving, so I wanted to just go back and see if I could do anything. I didn't really expect very much. And so I went back to the pools and with the intention of getting a few videos and was surprised at how much stronger I was now being a healthy person with no eating disorder and having a good, strong mental attitude and was surprised at how much stronger I was and actually hadn't really lost much over the years and just actually was stronger and could do harder dives. So I was like, oh, that's surprising. Maybe I should put a bit more time into this and see what can happen. And got chatting to the New Zealand coach and he was pretty excited. And within a couple of weeks, I was back into training full time. So it was all very unexpected and very exciting. And yeah, it's a really cool little adventure that I didn't ever expect to go on.
So how hard was it diving back then when you were sick?
It was very difficult, and I don't think I ever realised how difficult it was because it was my normal. But now as a healthy person, I can see that it's actually just, I mean, training is physically hard and mentally hard, of course, but it's enjoyable and I love it. Whereas it used to be, every part of it used to be hard. And that was just because I was constantly beating myself up and criticising myself. Whereas now it's, you know, I do it for the love of it.
So you think you're a better diver now?
I know I'm a better diver now. I mean, not just in the fact that I love it so much more, but that I'm doing much harder dives than I've ever done in my life before, significantly harder. So I'm a lot stronger. I know that. That's very obvious just from my diving list. And I feel like I've got more joy in my diving, which comes through in just the way that you do your dives, and that makes them a bit more spectacular. So, yeah.
What do you have to do to get into the games, to qualify?
For me personally, I've needed to get a certain list of dives together, which is kind of like what the top women are doing at the moment. I didn't used to do them in my old career 13 years ago. Like, not everyone did them back then. So I've had to learn those dives, and I have to get them really good. I've got some of them going really well. Other ones need practice. And I need to compete them well at a couple of competitions and compete them well alongside my synchro partner, Lizzie. And they've allocated two slots for the divers. There's about five of us that potentially could go. So it's basically whoever's doing the best out of us five.
Wait and see.
Yeah, we have to wait and see.
So are you doing synchronized as well as just diving by yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing both of those events. So individual and then the synchro.
You're a bit older than typical divers. I mean, divers are usually quite young, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 32 next year, so I think majority of divers would be around 24. I mean, it does vary a bit, but I'm definitely the older at the competitions. I didn't realise until I went to the last World Champs, and I was like, oh yeah, I've got more wrinkles than everybody else. But, you know, at the same time, everyone's just so lovely. They just kind of include you, like, you know, you're one of the old...
How did you go at the World Champs?
I went okay. Like, I was incredibly nervous. It was pretty much my first international competition back. But I was happy with one of my events. I was kind of like middle of the field, which was I was happy with after 7 months back in it, and how the event went in general. But obviously, in terms of my competing, I'd like to keep improving and, you know, gaining control over the nerves and just keep improving at that. Yeah.
So how different is diving now? I mean, I notice you're calling it your first career and your second career.
Yeah.
Is it completely different at the moment? I mean, just the dives, like you say.
Yeah, definitely the dives are a lot harder than they used to be. Mm-hmm. So what used to be, you know, only the really top women were doing, now it's kind of like standard, you know, like what you'd be expected to do if you were going to be competing at like Olympic level or Commonwealth level. So yeah, the dives are harder. And but other than that, you know, it is the same sport, just with the standards getting higher.
And you're excited about the thought of going to the Commonwealth Games?
Oh yeah, it'd be so exciting. Like, I've never been to an event where there's like an opening ceremony. Well, other than World Champs, that was my first a few months ago. But like the proper opening ceremony where you march on and have the rest of the New Zealand team there, that would be something that would be completely new to me. And being in a sport where it's largely individual, so I dive by myself, you know, being part of a bigger team is super exciting.
And do you think your daughter understands what you're doing?
She just kind of sees it as a part of my life now. Like, whenever she sees me, like, packing my bags, oh, you're off to diving, Mum? Yep, I'm off to diving. And, you know, it's just so normal for her now. And, yeah, she thinks it's cool. Like, she likes coming and watching, and she gives me marks. 69 out of 5. Thanks, darling.
That's diver Shay Boddington talking to Sally Murphy. And that brings us to the end of Extra Time for another week. Remember, if you wish to contact us, you can email us at sport@radionz.co.nz. On behalf of the Extra Time team, I'm Stephen Hewson. Bye for now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.